Campus FM presents Classic Texts, produced by Vicky Spiteri, presented by Margaret Ajus.
Hello and welcome to Classic Texts. In this series, we are presenting a number of different works of Victorian literature in a magazine format with the contribution of select guests who will give us short commentaries on the works in question. Today's programme focuses on The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, the recent release of Steven Spielberg's film remake of The War of the Worlds, starring Tom Cruise, Tim Robbins and Dakota Fanning, has helped to popularise and renew interest in this work of literature. The original film adaptation of The War of the Worlds was released in 1953, directed by Byron Haskin. Now, on the night of October 30th, 1938, hundreds of families rushed out of their homes in panic when they heard Orson Welles' dramatization of The War of the Worlds on WABC radio. Listeners ignored announcements saying that the broadcast was fiction, and those tuning in late, unwarned, heard fake newscasts, eyewitness accounts of the destruction of New York, and President Roosevelt talking to the nation, telling people to remain calm. People fled to nearby parks with wet handkerchiefs and towels over their faces to flee from what they believed was an invasion from Mars. The police were swamped by phone calls, and at least a score of adults required medical treatment for shock. Listeners failed to understand that the vivid radio drama was a realistic reconstruction of the 1898 novel.
No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed we were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even considered the possibility of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this Earth with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, they drew their plans against us.
We'll be right back.
Britain was still marvelling at the bicycle when the War of the Worlds introduced its readers to phenomena such as laser beams, chemical warfare, the dominance of man by machine, and more ominously, war on a scale that could annihilate the whole of civilization. Wells described his previous novels, The Time Machine and The Island of Dr. Moreau, as science romances. But The War of the Worlds is a novel that bridges the genre of science fiction and horror. It is one of the first stories on the arrival of the other from outer space, a treatment which is now a cliché. The novel draws additional strength from the horror story's tradition of treating normality with the paranormal. Narrated in flashback by a writer, the story begins when a mysterious cylindrical object lands on the common. When it unscrews, a creature appears who fills the narrator with disgust and dread. When somebody approaches the creature, there is a flash of light, an invisible sword of heat kills everyone in its path. Horrified, the narrator flees the scene. For a few hours, he can hardly come to terms with what he has seen, and life slips into a routine pattern. Fighting begins between the army and the aliens, but it soon becomes apparent that the soldiers are no match for the invaders. Having ensured his wife's safety, the narrator returns to the fray, his fear overcome by his consuming fascination with what is happening. And he sees more evidence of Martian destruction and the arrival of another cylinder. He manages to get close to the alien's fighting machine, which he describes as a monstrous triped, a walking engine of glittering metal. The Martian's murderous efficiency is graphically conveyed by an artilleryman who tells him that they wiped us out.
The hammering from the pit and the pounding of guns grew louder. My fear rose at the sound of someone creeping into the house. Then I saw it was a young artilleryman, weary, streaked with blood and dirt.
Anyone here?
Come in. Here, drink this.
Thank you.
What's happened?
They wiped us out. Hundreds dead, maybe thousands.
The heat ray?
The Martians. They were inside the hoods of machines they'd made. Massive metal things on legs, giant machines that walked. They attacked us. They wiped us out.
Machines?
Fighting machines, picking up men and bashing them against trees. Just hunks of metal, but they knew exactly what they were doing.
There was another cylinder came last night.
Yes, as it looked bound for London.
London? Carrie, I hadn't dreamed there could be danger to Carrie and her father so many miles away. I must go to London at once.
And me. Got to report to headquarters. If there's anything left of it.
In a telling phrase that seems to anticipate not only the coming centuries' world wars, but also the possibility of complete global destruction, the narrator comments, "Never before in the history of warfare has destruction been so indiscriminate and so universal." And from here, the novel charts the terrifying escalation of disaster as the Martians relentlessly continue on their path of destruction. Now, London becomes a scene of fear and frenzied attempts at survival. Meanwhile, the narrator has fallen in with a curate who is mentally devastated by the invasion. They are in the narrator's home when another of the Martian cylinders hits the house and buries them under the ruins. In the days of hunger, tension, and claustrophobia that follow, the curate becomes steadily more dangerous and deranged, and eventually the narrator has to prevent him from revealing their whereabouts to the aliens. When the narrator finally emerges from the ruins, he steps into a completely changed world. Because of the novel's flashback technique, we know that the narrator will survive. There's also a deliberate anticlimactic defeat of the Martians, which comes from a wholly unexpected source.
There were a dozen dead bodies in the Euston Road, their outlines softened by the black dust. All was still. Houses locked and empty. Shops closed. But looters had helped themselves to wine, food, and outside a jeweler's, some gold chains and a watch were scattered on the pavement. Stopped, staring towards the sound. It seemed as if that mighty desert of houses had found a voice for its fear and solitude. Desolating cry worked upon my mind. The wailing took possession of me. I was intensely weary, footsore, hungry and thirsty. Why was I wandering alone in this city of the dead? Why was I alive when London was lying in state in its black shroud? I felt intolerably lonely, drifting from street to empty street, drawn inexorably towards that cry.
The real merits of the War of the Worlds do not lie in its descriptions or its drama. Wells compares the Martian's actions of violence with man's ruthless destruction of its own species. The invasion serves to reduce man from master to slave, from colonizer to colonized. It serves to highlight the fragility of mankind under pressure and the collapse of values replaced by selfishness in times of desperation. Human agency is wiped out in the face of a situation outside man's control and confidence. That source of worldly decadence is lost.
The Guardian carries a review by Ian Sinclair of what he calls is H.G. Wells' classic combination of tabloid sensationalism and scientific fact in The War of the Worlds. The narrator is anonymous, a bit like H.G. Wells himself, who rose into the limelight from nowhere. The War of the Worlds, writes the reviewer, is written with tabloid speed and the lovely poetry of the commonplace. The page-turning impact of Wells's narrative of invasion comes in sharp bursts, breathless dispatches, as he lays bare the three strands of time, the now-submerged bucolic past of captured agricultural land, the present of imperialism in its boastful pomp, trains that run on time, swift communication, a splendid capital city, and the vividly imagined future of endless wars, ever-improving weapons of destruction, incompetent and mendacious government, and media hungry to report everything that isn't happening. Lists of place names become, for Wells, as for William Blake, a litany of significance. The mood is one of news, telegrams and electricity. The narrative's model is one that can be reproduced anywhere and anytime. It is written in a first-person eyewitness account and there is little in the way of a dialogue. Instead, there is detailed description, perhaps influenced by the war documentaries of the time. The narrator is nameless, a non-hero, drawn by the instinct of a good journalist towards curious incidents. The writing is rhythmic, incantatory, with long-breath paragraphs cutting against journalistic reportage. Wealth throws the population from a comfortable life of domesticity into a rage of widespread violence, in the face of which it is completely helpless. Wells writes that the Tasmanians were entirely swept out of existence in a war of extermination waged by European immigrants in the space of 50 years. In The War of the Worlds, the colonialist parallel is made. The city grubs, churchgoers, employers of domestic servants settled in London's fringes, would themselves be attacked, exterminated, cannibalized by invaders from an alien culture. The destruction is thorough, emphasized through biblical references, with phrases like pillars of fire and imagery from the Book of Revelations. The Martian cylinders land in different places on the English common, the safe, benign and slightly boring heartland of Englishness. Property and gardens are burnt by the heat ray, and rivers choke with red weed in what seem to be an impending ecological disaster. It is in this context that Wells philosophizes on man's place in the universe, his insignificance, his futile faith in what religion calls man's place in creation. The curate, the narrator's companion in his ordeals, is cast as weak, greedy, and selfish, losing his grip on reality. Wells seemed to have a low opinion of conventional religion, and just like his Enlightenment predecessors, he refused to read religious meaning into a natural disaster. The Victorian context was one of urban man disconnected from God, cut off from nature and separated from other men. In the 19th century, the modern age of alienation begins, and spiritual loneliness is the manifestation of our culture's longing to escape the merely human and perhaps reconnect with the non-human world, the common narrative in the science fiction genre. Sinclair in The Guardian writes that the impact of this 1898 novel lies in its topographic verisimilitude, its forensic examination of the comfortably mundane, and the complacency of Surrey suburbia. Wells outlines a pilgrim's progress for his own times, the writer continues, a road novel with a respectable citizen, unhoused, walking towards London, paddling along the Thames, squatting in an abandoned suburban villa. War fever brought home. It could happen here. Wells became famous partly as a prophet. In many of his writings, he predicts tanks, nuclear war, aerial bombings, gas warfare, laser weapons, and industrial robots. Wells had also first imagined future humans as essentially giant brains in The Man of the Year Million in 1883 and The Time Machine in 1895. This based on the Darwinian observation that humanity had evolved in the direction of larger and larger brains. But his science fiction novels are almost uniformly pessimistic about human nature and the future. Wells was a socialist and a utopian, and his tragedy was that his most successful predictions of destructive technologies he had to experience in the coming of the atomic age in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Wells, in a perfectly horror genre tradition, transfers the evil in mankind to the other, the alien from outer space. As with many of his peers, Wells externalizes a number of concerns typical of the Victorian era. Wells touched a raw nerve by commenting about the instabilities within Europe, about the age's urges to grab new resources and strategic land around the world. Throughout the latter part of the 19th century, the continent was in a perpetual state of tension, its major powers playing a dangerous game of shifting alliances and rivalries. War never seemed more than a careless gunshot away. And this is how Wells directed his menacing tale to an all-too-familiar backdrop of rapid engineering, industrial progress, and impending war. The War of the Worlds, while making the journey from sensationalist incident to moral parable, predicts an era when fiction and documentary become inseparable. Vicky Spiteri, Campus FM.
what he said.
Herbert George Wells' life saw his rise to fame from the humblest beginnings, studying science and zoology and acquiring three lifetime passions: women, social reform, and writing. Here are some key dates in his life. 1866, born in Bromley, Kent, son of a housemaid and a shopkeeper. 1879, becomes an apprentice draper. 1891, marries cousin Isabel Wells. 1895, marries Jane Robbins. 1898, the War of the Worlds. 1909, elopes with Amber Reeves. 1912, meets Rebecca West. 1914, birth of their son Anthony. 1920, turns into an international star. Invited by top politicians to the United States and Russia to discuss war and the future of the world. 1934, interview Stalin and Roosevelt. 1946, dies in London.
Scattered over the country, desperate, leaderless, starved, the thousands who had fled by sea, including the one most dear to me, all would return. The pulse of life, growing stronger and stronger, would beat again. As life returns to normal, the question of another attack from Mars causes universal concern. Is our planet safe? Or is this time of peace merely a reprieve? It may be that across the immensity of space, they have learned their lessons and even now await their opportunity. Perhaps the future belongs not to us, but to the Martians.
And we have come to the end of our program for today. The audio and music clips for this program were taken from the album The War of the Worlds. Credits go to the Great Writers magazine. Don't forget to join us again next week for another program in the series Classic Texts.
You have just listened to Classic Texts, produced by Vicky Spiteri, presented by Margaret Ajuse.